Well, it seems like only yesterday that we were here recording this.
Well, it wasn't yesterday, but it was 3 days ago.
Very nearly yesterday.
Yes. 4 days ago. 3 days ago, yeah. Take two, as they say.
Yeah.
We're a bit rusty at this old podcast thing, aren't we?
Yeah, but at least we've rehearsed this one.
Yeah, we've had a dress rehearsal. Yeah.
Do you want to tell the lovely listener why?
Because we came out to this location on Sunday and spent a good couple of hours here recording this fantastic podcast, having not done it for 6 months. We were patting ourselves on the back at how brilliant it was, yeah, only to find that we hadn't pressed the record button.
Yeah.
Something like that, anyway.
Well, yes. So you're admitting now it was user error?
No. Nothing to do with me. It was these damn devices.
Yeah, blooming technology.
Yeah.
But here we are again, and we'll tell the lovely people where we are in a minute.
So, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, the first one since June, actually. Sorry about that, but things have just been busy this year, and we've been rubbish at getting together and recording these. Not helped by the fact that you've been in France for a long period of time, and that I've been busy with work, but anyway, here we are again. My name is Glyn Coy, and I started Hidden Wiltshire a good while ago, and we've been doing these podcasts for 2 or 3 years now, I think 3 years.
Episode 44, this
one. Episode 44. And with me, as always, I have my two trusted sidekicks,
Paul Timlett and
Elaine Perkins.
Yay.
And we are here by water, of yes, which there is quite a lot.
A hell of a lot. In fact, just in the 3 days since we were last here, this river has risen about a foot, I reckon.
Yeah. So, where are we?
We are, people will be not surprised to hear, we're by the River Till. And we are just about 100 metres from the Shrewton water treatment plant, or in old money, sewage treatment plant. So there is an outfall from the treatment plant just off to our, or just behind us here. And this is the spot where, the infamous spot where the 12 months from July 2019, good old Wessex Water discharged untreated water into this river, right where we're standing, for a total of 5,110 hours, which equates to it's over 7 months. So much scandal around that. But I have to say that looking at the river today, it's all a bit churned up because you can probably hear it. It's flowing at quite a rate. And this is a winterborne, so this is dry for much of the year. And you wouldn't know it because there's a real torrent flowing through here. And it's a bit churned up, a little bit muddy, but still really clear. And you can see to the bottom, you can see the stones at the on the river bed. And even when Wessex Water was discharging all that SH1T into the river, it looked like this. It was clear. It didn't smell. So it just shows you how difficult it is to detect things like this. But they've cleaned it up now, and they've spent a lot of money at the treatment works behind us. They've made a reed bed. There's a new reed bed there. So if you go on the Wessex Water website, it all looks lovely. But that remains to be seen. So that's where we are.
Excellent. And it really is wet here. I mean, I'm looking at there's like a boardwalk, two planks put across the river, and either side of it is flooded, so you can't get onto it.
You could,
but you'd be taking your life into your own hands, because that flow rate of the water is pretty strong.
Well, the planks have been bolted onto what remains of the old sluices here, and I've spoken before about the sluices that we find on chalk streams in Wiltshire, and 100, 200 years ago, this had been used by the drowners to control the flow of water into the meadows, which are below this point. And there's another set of sluices about, I don't know, a quarter of a mile 500 metres or whatever downstream from here, and they're not in such a good condition. So years ago, the drowners would have operated the gates and the sluices to flood the fields, which would bring up the temperature of the land a couple of months earlier than that otherwise would have been the case if it had just been done, left to its own devices. So the water warms the land. The land is probably, or the grass that grows, is probably 2 months ahead of where it would have been. So they're able to turn out livestock onto the grass much sooner, and it's more productive. And that's the theory behind it. But as I said, these planks cross what's left of the sluices. And today they're an island in the middle of the river.
Yeah.
In fact, when we were here on Sunday, somebody came down, didn't they, with dogs?
Yeah, they did, and they walked across.
Yeah, we're stood here in our wellies, keeping well out of the water, and this young woman turned up just in walking boots and just ploughed into the middle of it. Made us feel like real wimps.
I'm not sure she could do that today, though, because that's
it's
definitely worse than that. You could get carried away. Oh, and the other point about this spot is that this is the old ford across the river as well.
Well, I wouldn't fancy driving across that today.
No. And it still is a ford, and this is, although it's difficult to see how you get a 4x4 down here, well, you couldn't, but this is actually a byway. So if you could get through that pedestrian gate just to our left here, then you could drive across here. But people do it on trail bikes, on motorbikes and horses, of course, and bikes and stuff. A long-established ford over the River Till.
So even though we haven't been doing many podcasts over the last 6 months, we haven't been idle on the Hidden Wiltshire front. There's been quite a lot of activity that we've been covering off through various mediums, including the website articles as usual, various walks and talks and things. So should we talk a bit about those?
Yeah, we're stood here looking at a long list, but we can pick out one or two of those.
So I've been looking at the lost settlement of Fishton Anger, which is which predates Salisbury, New Sarum, and was around the station area of Salisbury, but now has been completely taken over by the city. So I've investigated what it was like when it was its own settlement. I used to live in that area, and I've discovered, including my own, ghosts, monsters, witches, and martyrs.
So your own ghosts?
My
own
ghosts.
You have a ghost? You have a ghost.
My very own ones in my old house. And so it's well worth having a read on the website for that, if you're into that sort of thing.
So is it still called Fisherton Anger?
No, it's not. It dropped its name, I think, probably around about 100 years ago, and it's now just Salisbury. So other parts of Salisbury, like Laverstock, etc., are still called, and Bemerton are still called what they used to be called. But Fisherton Anger has lost its moniker.
It's been absorbed into the city. Interesting.
But we're talking about the area, so it's partly around... Queen Elizabeth Gardens and the station.
So there's been a settlement there. Well, there's evidence of Neolithic and Mesolithic remains there.
Wow.
So
you weren't
really
living there then, though?
No, actually not.
So, speaking of ghosts and spooky things, you also did an interesting article that we call the Selwood Triangle. That generated quite a lot of interest. In fact, it's had more hits than anything we've ever done in Hidden Wiltshire.
By a long margin.
So it attracted all sorts of weird and wonderful comments and folk.
Yes. So that started out slightly differently than it ended up, because we were headed down to the village of Stourton, around Stourhead, and we were investigating the Stour Valley, and there's a Motton Bailey there, which I thought, if it was close to the river, could it be sort of a more of an ancestral mound, one of the old prehistoric mounds. So we were hoping to get down to there and then walk around and across to Garston Mill, where there was a scene of a flood in the beginning of the last century. So, and it was quite a bad flood, but fortunately nobody was killed. So I was going to do all that, but I got lost straight away. So, and then I couldn't find the Motton Bailey because of a diversion in the footpath, which we might touch on later. So basically, being lost and everything, and I always get lost in that area, and it's an area where the old Selwood was at one point.
Selwood Forest.
Yeah, Selwood Forest, where King Alfred mustered his troops. So I just felt there must be some sort of kind of Selwood Triangle going on.
Yeah. A bit like the Bermuda Triangle, but Wiltshire's version.
That's
of it.
Right, yeah. Yes. Yes. And that attracted quite a lot of attention, but it's all made up by me.
But it's, it attracted some of the more, well, the more unattractive examples of human nature.
And yeah, it attracted a load of nutters.
Yes, and there was a particularly unpleasant person who made some quite personal comments. Somebody who professed to have gone to Oxford University and was of an age who should have known better, you'd have thought, but there you go. But
that's the internet, isn't it? It removes people's filters, doesn't it? And they just say stupid things.
Yeah, probably never see them or hear from them again.
No. So, what else have we been up to? What have you been up to, Paul, apart from...
Nothing.
...being in France?
I did my usual six-week stint there in the autumn. But before I went, I didn't do very much at all between June and before I went. But afterwards, we've done my trusted walking buddy Stu and I did a couple of walks. When I got back, both on the website, I wrote blogs for both of them, and on the Facebook group. One was, I'm trying to find them now. Where were they? Oh yeah, here we are. Egbert's Stone. Which is a very neat little segue from where we are to that walk, where we were by a ford, but this one was over the River Wylie at Kingston Deverell. So we started in Kingston Deverell and walked up onto the downs all around there, came dangerously close to the A303. But that blog's called Egbert's Stone, the Harrow Way and a Splendid Bottom.
We love our bottoms.
We love our bottoms. And this bottom was recommended to us by Jill Caudle, who follows the podcast, somebody that Glyn knows of old, and lovely route. And the Splendid Bottom was a little sort of dry valley that she found. Again, very, very close to the A303, and it was really beautiful, lovely spot. But King Egbert was the grandfather of King Alfred, and he supposedly held court on the hills, on King's Court Hills, strangely enough, although I'm sure it wasn't called that in those days. But he held court on the hillside there above Kingston Deverell. And the stone was supposedly where he stood on the stone and passed judgment on whatever it was the courts were pontificating about. And at some point the stone or stones were brought down into the village, and just by the church in Kingston Deverell there is a garden or a small field where there are a couple of sarsen stones which I've seen, and they supposedly are Egbert's stone. But the ford, just a little bit down river from there, is where Alfred supposedly mustered his troops before going on to the Selwood Forest for the night before the Battle of Ethandon. So a lot of history there, more stones, more fords. So
yeah, I think I'm definitely going to do something about King Alfred in Wiltshire this year, because you know there are various routes you can trace through the valleys through to where the Battle of Ethandon allegedly took place, but it'd be good to try and do a piece which links all of that together, because the area of Selwood Forest is they camped at a place called Eily Oak, which some people think is inside what's the name of the wood, is it Southley Wood near Warminster, where you've got Robin Hood's Bower.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And I've been there, it's quite fascinating, but it'd be good to do something about that.
And of course the ford at Kingston Deverell predates Alfred's.
Yes.
It was the junction of there's at least one Roman road that is thought to pass through there. And in the hills above Kingston Deverell, there's several Roman roads that go back and forth through that area. The last walk that Stu and I did was an interesting one. Again, another one recommended by Jill Caudle. And it's called, I call it Tisbury and Odford Vale, brackets Harold's Bench and Bottom.
Another bottom.
Another bottom, hurrah! So, this, it was a funny old walk, and I nearly didn't write it up. There's nothing wrong with the route, it's a perfectly good route, but the day we did it was not unlike today. It was grey and it was damp and it was really boggy. And we weren't wearing wellies that day and we got absolutely bloody filthy. And we trudged through a lot of quagmires on the way and we were getting very fed up and it just sort of drizzled all day. But that was sort of the first part of the walk where we parked up in Tisbury and went out really following the West of England railway line, which we crossed a couple of times. But the return leg was through what I'd never heard of, the Odford Vale, which was absolutely beautiful, even on a grey, drizzly day like the day we were there. And at the head of this, up in the hills around this area, just before we got to Odford Vale, we found a bench. We knew it there. It was there because Jill Caudle told us about it. And it's called Harold's Bench. And it's a wrought iron bench which sits at the top of this dry valley, at the top of this bottom. And it's got Harold written on the back of it, or carved into the back. Or I don't know if you carve iron, but anyway, on the back of the bench. And Stu and I stopped there for a coffee, just looking at the landscape. And after I wrote up the walk and posted it, somebody emailed us and said, Harold was my dad, and have you got any more photographs? So I replied to her, and after a while, to which I apologise, but I did reply and say, can you tell us more about your dad and Harold and how he came to have a bench in that particular spot? And he obviously did admire his bottom, because Jill, the lady that wrote to us, said that valley was a particular favourite spot of his, which presumably explains why he's got a bench up there.
Yeah. Interesting.
But definitely a walk to do, but not on a day like this when it's one for the summer, I think.
So,
have you done anything at all?
A few things. I did do some walks over the summer, again with in collaboration with Wiltshire Museum. That was actually in collaboration with the museum and the exhibition they were having over the summer, which was Anna Dillon and Hedley Thorne's, what do they call it? Elevating Wiltshire?
Was that the book? Was it Wessex Airscapes or something?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah. And but it was about aerial views of Wiltshire, which Hedley is a drone photographer, and he takes these landscape shots of all the lovely locations of Wiltshire.
And beyond.
And Anna paints them. So they're actually friends of ours, so we hooked up with them and said, you know, we're happy to do some walk programs that tie in with the exhibition. So that's what we did. We did three of them, I think, in the end. All well received, and people travelled from far and wide, from outside of Wiltshire, to attend those. So that was good.
And we plug our books on this podcast, but it's worth plugging Anna and Hedley's book. It is beautiful. You got a copy?
I don't have a copy, no. Right. I must get one.
I picked one up when I went to the exhibition. It's a beautiful book. Very good. So that's well
written. I think it was written by Anna's father, Patrick.
Patrick Dillon, yeah.
Yeah, because Patrick did a talk as well at the museum I attended. It was all very nicely done with the talks and the walks and the exhibition. Very well run exhibition over the summer, that was. A couple of other things. I did some talks, which I'm doing more of these now. I'm going to be doing more in 2024, but I did two talks at Royal Wotton Bassett Library. I did a talk at Salisbury Library. I've got some more talks lined up. I've got one at Trowbridge.
Salisbury Museum. Library or Salisbury Museum?
Salisbury Library.
Oh, it's a library. Okay.
Yeah. It was to tie in with some events going on in library, the library world back then. That was quite interesting. But yeah, I've got Trowbridge Museum booked at the end of January. Arundel's in Salisbury, they've asked us to come along in March, and I'm doing Royal Wotton Bassett History Society in April, and I'll be booking a few more of those throughout the year. But keep looking at the Facebook page or the website and you'll find out more about these and the dates, etc. I also did a joint article with our friend Emma at Weird Wiltshire. So Weird Wiltshire, where Emma captures the stranger side of Wiltshire in terms of folklore and spooky stories and UFOs and things like that. But she asked me to write out my top 10 favourite hidden Wiltshire spots, which I kindly did, and that's on the Weird Wiltshire website. And I think the only other thing I wrote up was the nooks and crannies of Bradford-on-Avon, where I went around Bradford-on-Avon off the beaten track, picking up all the little interesting things you can find along the way. And that was based on a walk I did with Bo Novak a while ago, where she gave me the guided tour of the hidden parts of the town, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was a good article. Some lovely spots there. Talk about hidden.
Mm. Yeah, and just to say, in Bradford-on-Avon, at this time of year when they've got the Christmas lights up, it's a really nice place to walk around in the evening. Mm. With all the sparkly lights, and you go down some of the old narrow streets up to the top on the Tory. It's really picturesque, lovely town to wander through on a crisp winter evening. So I think that covers everything we're going to, but I think you wanted to have a bit of a rant, didn't you?
Well, yeah, kind of. And it was, again, a neat little segue, because one of the other walks I did earlier on in the year was, I called it Northwest Border Block Paths and Long Barrows. And on that subject of block paths, we talked quite a lot to Hedley Thorne and to Paul Whitewick, who's got a really good YouTube channel called, strangely enough, Paul Whitewick. And Paul knocks out a YouTube video every week. How on earth he does it, I've got absolutely no idea, because it's a huge amount of work.
Well, we did one. It
took us months. And he's doing them every week. It's just unbelievable. And he's got a job. He's got a proper job as well.
Yeah.
Because Hedley sometimes appears on Paul's YouTube videos, apart from doing their own separate YouTube channel called, I think that's, is that called? Wessex Ways, that's right.
That's a podcast, yeah.
That's a podcast, yeah. Yeah, but it's also on YouTube,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And they had been up for Paul's channel to Cold Kitchen Hill. And I swear that these guys keep following us around, because they keep popping up at places that we've been to, and or maybe it's just because these are lovely places to go to. But anyway, they've been up to Cold Kitchen Hill, and Paul did a YouTube video about open access areas, about how a lot of them just cannot be reached using public rights of way. So they're little islands, and they went to one up on Cold Kitchen Hill, which we've also been to, and we did a podcast
we
recorded a podcast up there.
And that's around the shooting lodge.
Yes, that's right. And so they were up there, and we sort of talked to them, because it winds them up and it winds us up, the fact that open access areas that can't be reached, but the whole wider subject of blocked rights of way. And just on open access areas, and I was discussing this with Paul Whitewick, or swapping messages with him. The open access areas were created as part of the Countryside Rights of Way Act, which I think was the year 2000. And it was sort of unfinished business, and they never really finished the work that they were supposed to be doing on open access areas. So they created these areas, but the next stage was to then link them up to the public rights of way network. And they never did that. And that's why you've got all these little islands dotted around. Now, you can legally access these islands of open access. I think it's largely accepted you can do it by the shortest available route from a public right of way, but it's pretty unsatisfactory, and it's unfinished business, and it needs sorting. Now, whether it will get sorted in the foreseeable future, I highly doubt. There doesn't seem to be much. There's certainly no appetite under the current government to open access to the countryside. I'm a firm believer in the right to roam, an England version of right to roam. I know a lot of people disagree with that, but that's what I think. And the Labour Party said that they were going to introduce an English right to roam, and they've since rowed back on that. I've not seen any sort of great commitment from anybody, whichever political persuasion, to open up access to the countryside. But setting open access areas to the side, we've also got the subject of our existing network of rights of way. And you heard us talk about this before, the number that we've reported between the three of us. a number of rights of way that we found as blocked or illegally diverted, and we report them to Wiltshire Council and they just seem to disappear into a great big black hole. Although Elaine, you did manage to get a response on one.
Get one style repaired.
Style fix, yeah. I mean, I've been reporting these for years, and apart from an automated response and a case number, I've never had any feedback at all. And it's little wonder, because Wiltshire Council only has 6 rights of way officers across the whole county, and one of them...
I've had a response on one.
Oh, you've had one?
Yeah, so I complained that a farmer had built a fence across a right of way without a stile. So I filled in the form on the website, and about 2 weeks later, I got a response saying, we've written a letter to the landowner.
Oh, cool.
So 6 months later, I went back to the same spot.
And
nothing.
The same.
No.
The letter was there.
Yeah. They've written a letter, a stern letter. Yes.
Yeah.
Jolly good. So sort of moving on from that, and something else that I've just chatting to Paul and Headley about, was there's a big initiative going on at the moment in registering what were historic rights of way which have been lost. And there was a cut-off date to do this, which was the 1st of January 2026. And so the inevitable happened, and hundreds if not thousands of rights of way applications were submitted to councils all across the country for what's called definitive map modification orders. So the definitive map is the definitive place to go to when you want to see if there's a right of way somewhere. And Wiltshire has one, and all counties have one. So there's all these applications went in, people saying there was a right of way here hundreds of years ago and it's been lost and we want it put back. And the British Horse Society, the Ramblers and Open Spaces Society and others all sort of got together, and they've been piling in these requests. So because of the sheer number of them, the Department for the Environment lifted the deadline, because there was no way that councils were going to get through all these applications by 2026. And they basically removed the deadline. There was no deadline. And then landowners and farmers whispered in the ears of people at the Department for the Environment and the Secretary of State, and the deadline was reintroduced, albeit it was pushed out to 2031. 1st of January 2031, which is still uncomfortably close. That's not very far away. And especially when you consider that Wiltshire Council, we're told, deal with 4 or 5 of these DMMOs, Definitive Map Modification Orders, 4 or 5 per year. So in Wiltshire alone, they reckon it's going to take them between 74 and 93 years to work through all these modification orders. Now, what I don't know is what happens to the ones that have been already submitted. Are they expunged as of 2031, or do they subsist because the applications have gone in? I just don't know. If anybody does know or can tell us, then please do contact us. A bit of a rant there. And just sort of to finish off on that, rustling of papers here, I read recently that a Freedom of Information request had gone in to see what the current government was doing on its recent commitment to basically provide access to green and blue space to everybody in England. I think it just applied to England, because Scotland has a right to roam. Everybody in England, so basically within 15 minutes of where they, a 15 minute walk of where they live, so you should be able to get to a green or blue space, have access to it within a 15 minute walk. And I'm not quite sure who it was, but a body submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the government to say, what are you doing about this? And basically the response was, we have no plans and no idea how we're going to meet this commitment, which I think is a blooming travesty, to be honest, but there you go. And back to the point about, you know, where we stood now and what we're going to talk about in a bit, and rivers. I mean, this is a disputed figure, I know, but if you talk to canoeists, wild swimmers, anybody who uses, or walkers using rivers and river banks, we only have a clear and undisputed access to 3% of our rivers. And that's on top of the fact that, well, it's the fact, again, it's disputed by many, that we can only access 8% of the landmass in England. So creating a situation where people can reach green and blue space 15 minutes walk from their home, that is a big ask, and there are no plans.
There you go.
Mm.
Couldn't organise a...
Well, yes.
Anyway,
yeah. Moving swiftly on. Any of them. Because we're not political in this podcast at all, are we? Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the next subject, a little bit of music.
So, on to this week's topic, which is rivers.
Funny enough.
Which is quite handy because we're stood right next to a river in Wiltshire.
If we stand here any longer, we'll be in it.
We might be in it, yes, because the waters have been rising over the last few days, as we've been saying. We're going to talk about Wiltshire's rivers. I believe 39 in total flow through Wiltshire. There are quite a few that flow through Salisbury in itself. Four or five, I think.
Five.
Yes.
Nadder, Ebble, Bourne, the Hampshire Avon and the Wyly, which joins the Nadder at Quidhampton. Lots of other rivers, Bristol Avon, Tetbury Avon, quite a few Avons, aren't there? Bybrook. Yeah.
Two oblique three, so yeah. Not sure if the Tetbury Avon counts as a separate Avon in its own right, because it joins the Bristol Avon.
Semington Brook, Odford Brook, Marden, Kennet, the Thames.
Yeah.
The Thames.
It does, yeah.
Inglesham.
Inglesham. Yeah. I wrote a blog about Inglesham and the church, fantastic church, one of the best in Wiltshire, in my humble opinion.
It is.
And there's a short stretch where the Thames flows through that little nugget of Wiltshire that juts in between...
that funny-shaped finger, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's a finger that points up into, is it Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire or Berkshire, whichever counties it is up there.
Fascinating, interesting. So we're not going to talk about all of the 39 rivers in the next 20 minutes, you'd be pleased to know, but we'll talk about a few.
Yeah.
I think, Elaine, you've got some interesting tales to tell, particularly about the Bourne, where you've been doing a study.
That's right, yes. So, of course, living in Salisbury, I'm right next to the five rivers, and I do actually live next to the River Bourne, so it has a special presence for me anyway, but... When about a year and a half ago, I think it was, that Tim Sykes from the University of Southampton is doing a study on winterbournes. He asked if he could find anybody who might be interested in helping him out. It's a big bit of a commitment. You had to go to the river where it's a riverbourne and spend at least two times monthly, you know, thinking about your feelings by the river. So, although where I live, the winterbourne, the bourne isn't a winterbourne, I did pick out an area near Newton Tony and the Winterbourne Downs, the RSP reserve, that I thought would be okay. So,
because you're a volunteer at Winterbourne Downs, aren't you?
I am now. This all came
out. Oh, this
out
is four.
From,
okay.
So again, coming back to that idea that can we actually get to a wild area of the river? I looked all the way up the Bourne, which runs from Burbage right the way down to, rather unceremoniously, it enters the Avon just outside B&Q in Salisbury. But it's still pretty. Basically, there were very few areas that were not just in a village where you could actually go to. So I asked the warden of the RSPB reserve if I could perhaps just come onto their area just once a month, say, just to see if it was different from the village of Newton Tony, and she kindly agreed. So so I was able to spend one of my visits there actually on the reserve as well as looking around the village.
So you can clear up a question in my mind. So that bit of Winterbourne Downs Reserve, where the river flows through, is that open to the public or not?
No,
it's not. Which is why you have to get permission.
That's why I have to get permission, yes. So it's the area that you can walk around, just north of Newton Tony, you can look down onto the Bourne as it's flowing through the Winterbournes, but you can't actually get access to it. But I did have that privilege during the study.
Yeah.
So.
It is frustrating, isn't it, how much of the rivers are inaccessible?
Oh, no.
And all the rules and regulations around ownership of the rivers is interesting as well.
I think
you've got some experience of that. If you've got a river at the bottom of your garden.
Yeah, it's this whole principle of riparian rights. So because the River Till runs along the bottom of my garden and all my neighbours, we apparently have riparian rights over the river. And I'm never entirely sure what that means, because it's not an ownership as such. It's not. So if you look at the deeds of my house, you won't find the riverbank on there. But we do have these riparian rights and responsibilities. So we're responsible for not allowing the I got told off by the Environment Agency for putting grass cuttings on the banks of the river. Now, I'm not sure whether that's to do with riparian responsibilities or the fact that they claimed it was a flood risk because the grass could fall in the river and flood it. But in fact, the other day when we were here and we had our dry run at this, our rehearsal.
Dress rehearsal.
I was reading a very long paper by the Country Landowners Association about riparian rights, and that talking about the access to 3% of our rivers in England, which is disputed, there was a claim by people who use the navigation of rivers that we do have navigation rights over these rivers, and that riparian rights extend to the river bed and not to the water that flows through it, and so. Wild swimmers and canoeists would argue that we have navigation rights, but of course the moment you set foot on the bank you're technically trespassing, whereas the Country Landowners Association commissioned a firm of lawyers who argued the complete opposite, and both parties would claim that they're absolutely right and correct on this, and it's indisputable. So who knows, they can't both be right.
It needs to be tested in a court of law, I think.
Well, I think the CLA, who I have no great fondness for at all, they argue that it was actually went to the House of Lords, and there was a House of Lords judgment which affirmed this. So I'm not sure what canoeists and wild swimmers have in their armoury to argue the contrary, but they do.
Coming back to the study that I was doing, I did find differently, it was different out in the countryside for my emotions, especially if I was a bit of an agitated state. So being by the river, or being even by the riverbed in the open countryside, was just a very calming effect.
Yeah.
Whereas the village itself was quite busy, but that again was quite a nice thing to have, because lots of the villagers came and chatted to me. So it really was a very... I grew throughout the whole experience, and I also grew a great love for the river in all its states. So anybody who fears that people coming onto open land, their land, if you build up a love for the area, then you're not going to do anything.
Yeah, you'll develop a respect, an understanding, and therefore a respect for it. And so back to the sort of right to roam, people who don't like the principle say that people don't know how to treat the countryside and they'll come along and trash it, whereas what you have just been saying, and I would completely agree with, that if people understood it better and came to love it more, they would respect it more. And back to where we came in, and we're talking about discharge of untreated water into rivers, it sort of opens up the whole question of citizen science. Because, of course, the Environment Agency has very little resource these days. There's very little monitoring goes on of rivers. So people all around the country have taken it upon themselves to start doing the same, and are doing it for the Environment Agency. And I was approached by somebody in Orchestone, just upriver from Shooton, so the Till flows through there, and he's the flood warden there, although sadly he's moving on. But he asked me if I was interested in doing that along the Till, because I'm not sure what, if any, monitoring is done here now. Maybe there's a bit because of the controversy around the treatment works. But, you know, just like you, Elaine, I mean, people, you know, I love this place. I love this whole stretch of the river. I spend many hours sitting by these, particularly by these sluices, and just watching the world go by. And, you know, I would love to get involved in taking samples, getting them tested, see what's in there, because I don't think anybody else is doing it.
And it has a very good calming, relaxing effect.
It does.
Well, that's the interesting thing for me, is the way you described how it improved your mood, and that emotional connection with the river came throughout the year.
Yeah.
It just made me realise that, you know, maybe we're meant to be outside in nature. You know, that's a natural state for us as people, and that's where we, you know, get our mental health improved. And I think if you keep yourself away from it, it's not good for you.
Yeah,
you need to get out there.
And that's why, you know, I completely, you know, support the government's sort of statement that they want to improve access. It's just a shame they didn't think it through in terms of how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, apart from else, you know, maybe it'll keep people out of hospital and relieve the pressure on the NHS.
Oh, yes.
So, Elaine, you also have got some things to say about the Hampshire Avon.
Yes, so I only know the Hampshire Avon from Amesbury southwards, really, in the county. I believe it starts somewhere up near, well, two tributaries, one east of Devizes and one up at Bishop Canning. They sort of all run into the Pusey Vale and then down along through Amesbury. Of course, the river there was used apparently to help bring the sarsen stones down to Stonehenge, I believe.
Some people believe that.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty much definitively proven that the sarsens at Stonehenge came from Westwood.
That's right, yes.
Just down the road from Savernack. So this is up just off the A4, which was handy, wasn't it, having the A4? Why on earth they didn't use that, I don't know. But there's a school of thought that says that the stones were dragged to the Avon, and then floated on rafts down the Avon all the way down to modern day Amesbury.
Yeah, well, it's possible, but it was certainly well revered by the ancients. And I think recently they've found the Bluehenge down near West Amesbury House, which is where they may have done some ritual cleansing of bodies, perhaps, as part of the voyage of the dead around that area. So that's one aspect of the Avon. Down through the Woodford Valley, it's a beautiful, beautiful course of the river. But again, you have pockets where you can get close to it and where you can't. There's a few bridges over at Normanton, down and down close to Wilsford and Lake House, you can see. Great Durnford, again, there's a beautiful walk along through the mill and up over onto the Normanton Downs, Stonehenge landscape.
And you were telling me when we were here last about the meteorite at Lake House, which I never knew.
Yes.
Although I've since yesterday just miraculously discovered an article about it.
Yes, it's
Sting's meteorite.
Sting's meteorite.
It's in the museum in Salisbury.
Yeah.
And yes, it's believed to be very ancient.
Yes.
It's quite massive.
And it was just stood by the door, wasn't it?
On his doorstep.
On his doorstep for years, and someone said, "What's that?"
He kept tripping over it.
So they think it was local, so it must have landed here and made quite an impact at some point. But many eons ago. So you never know.
Actually, just thinking about that, there must be an impact crater somewhere, because looking at the size of it and what's left of it, it would have been
all this sort of stuff will have filled it in.
But it would have been huge. Absolutely.
Looking at the size of it.
It would have had a huge impact locally.
Yeah. There's I'll probably edit this out, but My France connection near us is a massive crater which extends for miles and miles and miles where a meteorite landed. It's outside a beautiful town called Rochechouart, which is easy for you to say. Rochechouart. And there's a huge, well, I don't know how many, it wasn't huge, it's a huge crater, but the meteorite itself was relatively small. So, of course, the speed that they hit the Earth, they leave a massive mark.
It's interesting, because another place where I came across part of a River Avon was just outside Pewsey, where there's a nature reserve. It's a Wiltshire Wildlife Trust nature reserve called Jones's Mill. There's no mill there, but there must have been at some point. I think it's called the Vera Jeans Reserve, something like that. But there's a woodland there, which is very wet. I think the technical name for it is an alder carr. And the springs which give rise to the rivers just start just outside the wood, and there's small channels of water flowing through, lots of ferns, lots of wooden boardwalks through. It's an absolutely beautiful, fascinating place that it's off the radar for a lot of people, but really recommend having a look. But I think they claim the Salisbury Avon starts there. I think I was reading on the Wiltshire Wildlife Trust website.
Yes, it's possibly where the two tributaries meet.
But it's a really fascinating place where you can see where a river starts, really.
Yes. Yeah.
Close to the source.
So, it doesn't end in Wiltshire, obviously, but there's still part of Wiltshire that it flows through beyond Salisbury, which is down through Brickford and Alderbury. So, at Churchill Gardens in Salisbury, the Avon seems to sort of split into at least two, or perhaps even three or four different little tributaries, and then they join again at Alderbury. And there's some lovely walks down that way. You used to be able to cross the Avon in a couple of places at Brickford and Alderbury. There were stepping stones, which of course probably wouldn't be allowed these days to cross quite a large river like that. But there was also a ferry that took you from Brickford to Alderbury. And in Victorian times, Charles Dickens used to use that ferry when visiting his mate in Alderbury, a certain Augustus Pugin and his daughter.
There you go.
He also stayed at the Green Dragon, which he called the Blue Dragon, I think, in Martin Chuzzlewit. So there you go. You didn't know it was all written about about Wiltshire. So beyond then, beyond Brickford, you can't really walk along. It's all part of the Langford Estate.
Yeah.
And then you can then at Downton. There's another lovely circular walk up and around Falga House and back.
Yeah,
and Chartnall Saints, and that's a lovely walk.
There's another couple of rivers that have been included on the Hidden Wiltshire website, written up by our good friend Steve Dewey. He also writes really interesting books about UFOs and Warminster.
Yeah, we've got to get him back. We've got to do
Warminster thing. He wrote a really interesting article actually, where he followed the River Wylie all along its length into towards Salisbury. And he had a mission to take photographs of every single bridge over the river. I recommend you go and read it on the website. It's a really nice tale. But he talks about where it starts, and by the time the river gets to Kingston Deverell, it's become established enough to have the first bridge, I think. But prior to that, we were trying to work out where does it actually start, because it's already flowing through Kilmington, I think.
Or does it?
Well, the OS map shows it flowing through.
Oh, yes, of course, it does a loop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when we were doing the Egbert Stone walk, and we were up on Kings Court Hill, on the flanks of the hill, up by the there's a glider airstrip up there, where they catapult gliders up, and we were walking along the parallel to the landing strip. And we were looking down into some meadows, and I was looking at the map, and that's where it's thought is the source of the Wylie. But then there's other thoughts that it actually starts towards Long Knoll, you said.
Yeah, it might be underneath Long Knoll where it rises up. It could be actually that there are numerous little springs around that area.
Which is probably the case, yeah.
That, give rise to the water. But it's, it's very quickly downstream and very much an established river, where it heads all the way up towards Warminster before turning and heading through the Wylie Valley all the way to Salisbury in that direction. But it's a very nice river to walk around. Walk along when you can find stretches that
are accessible. The little bits you can get to, yeah.
And I've walked along a bit of it by Heytesbury, bits of near Bishop's Row as well in Warminster, you can walk along it. So there are parts of it you can get to. But I know if you look at the rivers just outside Salisbury, one of the interesting things I find is you see some of the rights of way lead down to the river and stop and start again on the other side. And I think there used to be ferries going across.
Yeah, that's the one at Brickford. Yeah, sure.
So interesting, very interesting. But the other river that Steve wrote about was 9 Mile River. And that was an interesting one for
which
me,
isn't.
Because it isn't 9 miles long. But anyway, I'll leave you to go and find that at your leisure. But definitely worth reading those articles on the website.
The only river I can really talk about is the Till. And we've done all that.
We've actually done a podcast on the Till before. So I guess.
But on the Wylie connection, of course, the Till does flow into the Wylie. It joins the Wylie at Stapleford, by the 36. And Stu, being a keen fisherman and member of an angling club, we did a walk from here, from Shrewton, all the way down to Stapleford, and there may have been a pub involved. But he took me to a stretch of the river where the Till joins the Wylie, which I'd never been to before, but it's owned by the angling club. And but he got me in. He got me in there.
Oh, dear me. Another part of the river blocked off too.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall we wrap things up?
Yes. Yeah, how are we doing for time? Lost my train of thought there. Thanks to Steve Dixon for the music. So the middle bit was called Sprung, which we used once before, and it seemed appropriate for this podcast. And as always, the bit at the beginning and the end is called The Holloway. And Steve's going through the ringer a bit at the moment. Lots of sort of family commitments that he's having to attend to. So the music and his wonderful photography has taken a bit of a back seat. So I hope to see him back soon.
Well, we've got enough music in the bank to keep recycling.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah, there's loads there. Still some books left in the online shop. You had a few of the first one. You got a few reprints.
Yeah, there's a few reprints of the first one. The first one's available. The second one's available.
Yeah.
In the online shop or in some Wiltshire bookshops as well.
Yeah. The website will put show notes and links and all sorts of stuff on there. So do go and have a look at that, because there's some places you might be thinking, what did they say? What were they talking about? So it'll all be in the show notes and you can follow the links. Otherwise, I think next podcast, sometime.
Well, I think we'll try and do them with a bit more regularity in 2024.
Yeah. We have a plan, don't we?
We do have a plan. We do have a plan. And we've actually got a very good, detailed and intensive plan ahead, thanks to Elaine.
Yes.
Who got us together and bashed our heads together and wrote it all up for us. And we've got a ton of stuff to do.
God Elaine's joined us, because we were utter shambles before. But now we have a bit of discipline.
And I guess the other thing to say is, obviously, we're recording this in the week before Christmas, and this episode will be out before Christmas. So wishing all of our lovely listeners a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and we will see you in 2024.
Yeah. Bah humbug. Bah humbug.
Bye. Bye.